too long. Firstly, my name's John Seven. I'm one of the directors of One Space. And Jodie Cox, the other co-director, is up the back screen watching as we have. So we'd like to welcome you on behalf of One Space and our team. I was going to go straight to Ross, but I think I'll just stop for a moment. I just want to acknowledge the traditional custodians where we are in the First Nations of Turrbal, Jagera and Yagara peoples, and we pay respect to their elders past and present. We're very fortunate to have this conversation before the exhibition opening, although this looks like the exhibition opening already, so that's a positive sign. I'm going to introduce Ross briefly, and then I'll introduce Michelle Dawson, who has written the catalogue essay, so you would have seen that up the front there. Ross has an extensive exhibiting career, participating in over 20 group exhibitions, and he's undertaken probably some 17 solo exhibitions throughout his career, three of which have been here at One Space. Ross has been shortlisted as a finalist for a number of art prizes, I won't name them all, and a winner of the Cathedral of St. Stephen's Art Prize. He's also collected in many private collections, and I reckon I can remember here, and public collections such as the Queensland Children's Hospital and both the Wesley and Mater Hospitals. There's much more to Ross's career, but I'll just be brief. So, Michelle, welcome to One Space.
Thank you.
Michelle and I have been emailing quite a bit, but it's so lovely to meet you in person. Michelle was born in New Zealand and moved to Australia in 1985. Sounds about right. She's a practicing artist herself and has been a highly commended finalist in many art prizes, including the Portia Beach Art Award, the Herford Hardwood Portrait Prize, and the Waldman Art Prize. Michelle also teaches at the Byron School of Art.
Correct.
I was going to also say, together they're a fine example of art friendships which collapse the notion of hard borders on the east coast of Australia. There's a view that the Sunshine Coast to about Lismore is a particular artistic population that pays no respect to that crazy border. I'm going to hand over to Ross first, and then after Ross says a few things, Michelle, I think you'll conduct that conversation from there. Is that good enough?
Yeah, long
time. Well done. Thank you both. Thank you.
First of all, thank you all for coming to this little show. I will do a little acknowledgement of country as well, because all of these works haven't been done locally. So the inspiration of these works are from around southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales. So I'd like to acknowledge the Turrbal and Yagara and Yugambeh and Combabur Mary and Kondamuka and Kabi Kabi and Camberwell people who cared for the country where these works were inspired. And I especially want to recognise their connection to country and especially their role in caring for our and maintaining our waterways, because this work is about water. And I think often we talk about country and the land, but water is a really important part of that. So I just wanted to acknowledge the people who have done that. I wanted to thank, of course, John and Jodie and their amazing team for hosting this exhibition. And thank you so much again. And Michelle for coming from Northern New South Wales and a few other people from Northern New South Wales. And my friend Hilary Herman, who came up with Michelle. She hates to be pointed out. and last but not least, my wonderful partner, Wayne. I'd like to acknowledge his role in this exhibition, because I don't think it could have happened without him. Thank you to my wonderful partner. So, after all that, over to Shell. So,
hello,
and Michelle, of course, did the essay in the catalogue as well. So,
and you having used the term endearment, I was going to say I'll try and be very proper and say Ross, but if I default to Rossi occasionally, then forgive me. So, yes, I've been friends with Ross for 20 plus, 25 plus years, and I bought a piece of Ross's about that long ago, I think. And I think one of the interesting things is the sense of water. Like that piece, I think, was from a series of works called Remnants of an Inland Sea. So it was like the ghost of water was there, but they were all based on Central Australia, right, and that much more arid terrain. And then the body of work called Resurfacing, which also suggests water, but was like, I think for me, some of those works, that sense that water had been there, perhaps even not that long ago, but gone, like the works that were cracked lines from the mudflats, and then we end up in the hydrosphere, which is all water. And I guess that would be the question I would like to start with for you, is that significance of water, or the memory of water, that, as far as I can see, goes through your entire kind of water body of work.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I mean, it's, water has such a presence for everyone, really. I mean, we're coastal people. Brisbane, I grew up on the Gold Coast. I was a nipper. So, you know, the beach was always a really important part of our social and, well, my childhood. Mm. So it's been with me since then, and a really important part. I mean, it pervades everything. And now Wayne and I live a couple of streets from the river, the Maywa, and it's so. And our daily walks are beside the river. I've been beside the river for almost 30 years. So it's got a presence in. It's had a presence in my life, and it's probably only recently that I've really started to acknowledge that and be in awe of it, really, in some ways.
Interesting, isn't it? Because you have always lived near the river and near water, but, you know, I guess COVID, that whole COVID time changed a lot of things for a lot of us. But before that, your practice was actually to go away from the water, wasn't it?
Yeah, to
go into the desert.
Yeah.
And then bring those sketches and photos and things back to that space.
Yeah, you'd always be camping by a water source, whether it be a waterhole or a creek or something. But yeah, it was certainly not a lot of water around. I mean, it's Central Australia, so. But yeah, that was my life for 15 years of travelling out there and working on that body of work. COVID. Everything got a lot smaller for all of us. And we did do a Western Queensland trip, which is where that water and the absence of water started to really take place. And then this work, which, if we're talking about where our inspiration or where things start. So this piece is actually the central circle, is actually the Richmond River, which I was born in Lismore. And back then, it's now called the Wilson, but it was always the Richmond back then. They changed it in 76, the name of the river. And yeah. And it's flanked by the Brisbane River, Maywa, on either side.
Because that would be my only other thing, is what's striking with this is it's the only instance when the rectangle turns up. You know, everything is circular, and I would ask you, why? Because it becomes hugely apparent when everything else is circular.
Yeah, I suppose I did it. The work's called Belonging, and because it's my birth river, or the river that I was born beside it, I wanted it to function a bit almost like an altarpiece, so a triptych, where you've got the three panels, and. It's ended up looking like a flag. It's not an altarpiece at all, but it was meant to be an altarpiece. So, so yeah, but it's certainly got that meaning for me anyway.
Well, that's such a creative thing, isn't it? That you have this intention about what you're doing, and then make it, and it's like, oh no, it's something else entirely.
Yeah.
But
it's become. Yeah. As soon as it went up, both John and I said, it looks like a flag. Anyway, yeah. Can I just... I'll read a little passages, just quotes from me mainly, and some quotes from Michelle from her essay during this little chat. So, I'm fascinated by the mercurial qualities of water, the interplay of light on its surface, the topographical nature of waveforms and the many nuanced impressions that are left in its wake on my memory. The undulating surface of water is the ultimate symbol for the ungraspable nature of existence. It is both phenomenological and eternal, never still, always evolving through constant change. And that's been a bit of a theme in my work for a while, that theme of permanence and impermanence, which I'll probably talk about a bit later on as well. The other thing is just, if we're talking about water, we can't help but look at the global importance of water in this epoch of climate change, of course. So I'm, even though the work isn't explicitly messaging climate change and climate science, I think it's just contributing to that rising chorus that is happening over the world about the importance of water. So that's my hope, is that it will actually contribute in that way. It's a funny thing, because a lot of artists take on that front, you know, the really explicit sort of stuff about climate change. I feel like a lot of people are getting eco-fatigue with the media and just that constant barrage and fear and doom. I think that the role of artists is to give people another way in, so that we're still talking to our viewers about climate change, but hopefully giving them another way into connecting with the planet and nature. So it's about taking water from the background noise of our daily existence. We use it every day. How many times do we turn on a tap? And planting it in the centre of our attention is something beautiful and precious. So it's about promoting water thinking to front of mind in order to shift our daily habits and actions. So every time we do turn on that tap, we might stop and consider. So that's, to me, what my little other angle is, I suppose, of talking about the climate.
Yeah, beautiful. I think, you know, that when you're writing an essay and you've got 800 words, for me, I start with about 2,000, and then you slowly, you know, creatively, can't remember who it was, but that's the notion that you have to kill your darlings, you know. So there's that honing down and honing down. And certainly at a certain point I did go in and Google things like how much of the planet is water and how much of our bodies is water and how much of our brains is water. And it's just astounding. Like, there's very little else going on. Humans are quite funny because we seem to range between, like, 65 and nearly 80% water, but that's quite a huge variation, I think. And the planets, I'm going to get these slightly wrong now, but the planets, like 75%+ ocean and water, but our brains, like this thing that's doing all this thinking and giving us supposedly personality and consciousness, is like 85% water, which it's astounding, really.
Yeah. There is a little didactic panel on that very back wall which just unpacks the word hydrosphere and then goes on to about some of those things, accounting for water. Mm. How much water is actually made in the production of a cup of tea, for instance. And I won't recite it all now because you can have a look yourselves.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So, Rossi, we flagged, sorry, the fact that these are the rectangles, but I think the really obvious, you know, overwhelming motif in the room, you know, the elephant in the room, is the circle. Mm. And that you've chosen with the show to be so specifically, for the work to be so specifically circular. And I just wondered if you had something to say about it.
Yeah, I might have something to say.
Maybe?
Well, I mean, water as a subject is pretty vast, you know, so it's for me, it's impossible to tether something like water. It's impossible to pin it down. So to have something, some sort of visual device that just gives you that point of focus, it was the first reason I chose that and the perfect circle.
Was it something, just to interrupt, was it something that just started to appear? Was it starting to come into your work, or was it a very specific decision with this work?
Well, it did start in the last show. There were a number of ovals and other parabolic sort of shapes. The oval in the last shape in the last show was more like a pool, like a mirror pool sort of device. But the circle really came from that, and it's also a bit like examining things through a microscope or a magnifying glass or something like that. So hence some of the things almost, and Michelle alludes to that in her essay, are almost take on a microbial sort of form.
Yeah, I did really feel like with some of them it reaches the point where you can almost see them kind of writhing, that in fact they move, it feels like they start to move past water, and that you can imagine some life form, you know, like the start of life, microbially crawling out of the ectoplasm or something.
Yeah. Well, I won't quote you from the essay then, because you just re-quoted yourself, but that's all right. So the other thing that's really important about the circular shape for me is that they're like mandalas. So when you're working in a circle, it really brings that studio practice down to that meditative approach, which a lot of artists talk about, where the time slows down and distractions sort of drop away, and you sort of move into that flow state. So in a way, working on that in that circular form is almost, it's given that it's a conceptual thing, but it really adds to that the way that you practice in the studio, I think. So it's spiritual, if you want to use the word spiritual, but that sort of mandala meditation. Hence, you know, these works are all, they're all called Meditation 1, 2, 3, 4. The smaller works are all called Reflection. So it's about contemplation and, again, steering us back to really considering water as a, in its global significance. So I won't quote your quote. Mm.
No, but they do. I think the other thing that is in the quote is that notion, and I think you do really get it in the space, that it feels like a galaxy.
Yes, yeah. Which I think was, like, you must have had a premonition, because Michelle wrote, "What is not open to interpretation is the recurrent motif of the circle. Instantly, they are planetary, a small galaxy suspended within the gallery, just as our own watery blue marble spins us about in space." She hadn't seen this gallery set up like this, but she saw it in her...
Yeah, my mind's eye, because, you know, because I'd seen the work and I'd seen the space.
Yeah.
There was that... And maybe because I'm visual, I'm an artist. There was that really clear notion that when you'd walk in, it was almost like you would be the planet turning around in the galaxy of planets, was my feeling.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what you've achieved with them, and John too with the hang.
It's, yeah.
It is like coming into a little galaxy. Yeah. It's really special.
Yeah.
Yes.
Eyes.
Yes, and so then that, I guess, would be... My next question is that the other thing they are suggestive of is the notion of the pupil, the lens, the pupil, the iris of the eye. And I would suggest, knowing you as I do, that there's been some sort of medical issues around your eye that has a certain prescience also in you choosing the circle. If that was something you felt to talk to.
I think it was a premonition, because I started the work before all the stuff unravelled with my eyes. So some of these smaller works, that's where the work initiated. And the good thing is, even though I had a good 6 months of pretty intensive troubles with my eye, all of the large works have happened since I've had retina detachments in both eyes, but we won't dwell on that because it sounds like old people talking about their health problems, because we've all got something that's going to go wrong. But I mean, it's sort of ironic that, you know, you're an artist and it's the your Achilles heel ends up being your eyes, you know, and it's probably going to be ongoing. But the human body is a wonderful thing, but I think also the human spirit is a wonderful thing, because you know, those sorts of adversaries that are thrown up really do give you a chance to exercise new ways of seeing and new ways of thinking and new ways of exploring the way that you work. So it's, for me, it's been a bit of a new beginning and really an opportunity. So I think that it's really important to make that out of our works. The other thing that I do want to mention, which is a bit naughty, is that I really love the word because now my vision is a bit cockeyed. So I quite like that word. So.
I mean, I think for me, and as that situation developed for you, was to see what I'd say is... Look, I think you can... Moments like that and crisis points, they really show you the person and the artist. And someone that's got that really unstoppable impulse to create, you just instantly started finding ways to develop your creative process around what was happening. And to see how crucial that was, that was one of the primary concerns, was to keep communicating as a visual artist. You know, and then you know you're just dealing with someone that has that unstoppable impulse to communicate and to make line and mark.
The good thing is my close vision is still really good, so if I'm this far away from stuff in the studio... Which is, I work flat with these works on my table, and you know.
And you work up that close, hey?
Yeah. Well, I have to. So I mean, it's more a focus issue that I've got than blurriness, but yeah. But certainly my close vision is really good, so hence why they're so meticulously detailed, and that's the good bit. That's the fun bit. Can I quote you from your essay? Which is really just a summary of what we've been saying. So it is given that creativity needs and thrives within constraints. In this instance, that confinement has manifested itself as the hydrosphere. His altered perception, like a river tributary flowing around obstacles and forming new paths to the sea, reshapes his process of making and the characteristics of the marks themselves. Poetry.
Poetry. Yes.
The other thing that I sort of harked to earlier on is just that fascination that I've got with permanence and impermanence. And a lot of my work has always been based on that. Going out to Central Australia year on, year out, you sort of see the way that the country changes if you go once, it looks like it's going to be like that for the next, you know, 100 years. But it really does change quite a bit. And that came into play with all of my landscape work. And now, of course, looking at the, you know, water is you know, it's ephemeral, the way that it exists. So the way that, you know, as I was saying before, you can't tie it down. I'll just read a little bit more about. So my current practice reflects on the ephemeral qualities of the natural world and the inevitable processes and concepts surrounding time, growth, flux, and disintegration. I'm preoccupied by notions of change evident in the physical world and the equilibrium that underpins its stability and its impermanence, giving rise to the transitory nature of our own existence. So that's the deeper level, I suppose, that I work at. Motivation, I suppose, yeah.
Very beautiful. I want to backtrack a little bit, because when you quoted me earlier, that the line opened with what is not open to question. Because one of my questions, and I don't know, I'm not even sure if I need to know the answer, but I'm going to launch it anyway, is this notion, because, you know, I know you use a lot of drawing materials, and I know you use a lot of fluid matter, but you also use computers and prints that you work on. And I guess my question is, do you define them, or would you define them in terms of, would you say they're predominantly drawings or paintings, or... It's a big question.
Oh, who knows? Actually, it's a funny thing, because I'll throw back at you a reply that you gave to me. I'd entered a drawing prize, and I said to Michelle, you know, and you're always Devo when you don't get in, and everyone doesn't get in, and the rest of it. But I said to Michelle, you know, like it's a chook raffle, a chook raffle. But I didn't get into this drawing prize, and Michelle said, that's probably because it was a painting.
I ruined it.
But it is that there is a fine line. I mean, I draw with paint, or I draw with ink, and it's a, what is a drawing? What is a painting? I'm going to start drawing on canvas soon, which is a sense, like there's this sort of loose definition of drawings on paper, paintings are on canvas, but if I'm drawing on canvas...
Yeah. You can run into trouble. Often I teach a bit too, and I often, when I'm talking about drawing, I bring up the Craig Ruddy and his portrait of Gulpilil that won the Archibald Prize, and then one of the other participants took the prize and the board to court because they said that's not a painting, it's a drawing. And it was a very linearly built charcoal and graphite portrait on wallpaper. It's huge. And I think if you were going to give a definition, you would probably say, yeah, it's probably a drawing. But it was also far and away the best thing in the prize that year. And the thing I'll always be grateful to is that when they took it to court, the judge basically threw it out. And he said, it is not for the court to define what is a drawing and what is a painting. And it was just like this, oh, thank goodness. But I do know that's what you run into. And in a way, it gives you a great freedom to, if you want to enter a lot of prizes, because that... is very elusive, but it is a question people pose and ask, because they have that incredible multi-layered with you, because you also have the lovely ones where you really digitally manipulated photographically, haven't you?
Yeah, and the video stuff. I mean, in 20 years' time, people probably aren't going to be even asking what's a drawing, what's a painting, because... You know, digital and AI and all of that stuff. I mean, it's already there as, you know, huge swathes of artists doing just that.
And if you enter a prize now, most of them have got a line saying, that you have to say it wasn't AI generated.
Yeah.
So that is that is the next can of worms, really.
So
I think that in a way leads us into the technology, perhaps, that you enlist to your as a means to your communication. And I'd love it if you told them that lovely story about that process where you, with the app
down
at the river on the pontoon.
So, well, I'll start brief for that and lead into it. So photography's always been a very big part of my practice. And like going out to the desert, I'd usually take on one trip, which was usually about a 2-week camping trip, I'd usually take about 5,000 images. And that was simply a method of me seeing and framing, and it's like if you're seeing it through the eye of the camera, it's almost like it gets in a different way to just this free-flowing looking. And then you've got these field notes in photography to take home with you and refer to, which is a really nice thing. So photography's always been there, but I'm using it much more now in some ways as a visual aid because of my eyes. And also I just love... I'm falling in love with new technology as an older person. There's a video up the very back which is using that same technology. And all it is it's Apple. It's only in Messages. And if you go into Messages, there's a whole number of filters. And there's a particular filter that you can apply, which looks, it's called Cartoon. And it breaks things down to line in ways that are just like a drawing. So I often take photos like through that app. So I've got those photos as source material. Or I'll take photos on my camera, bring them home, and that's how the video was actually produced. Bring them home, put them on my computer screen, darken the room, and then set up the iPhone, my dumb technology, and take the images off the screen of the photographic images through my app to break it down to that those sort of that technology that I use.
I think I love the fact, and I hope I got that right, that the app only works in the Messenger. Is that right?
Messages, you can only when I've searched for it online, they say you can only use it as on Messages. So if anyone else finds a way of doing it,
I'm sure most of the rest.
It's really laborious because you have to go into Messages and you have to message yourself. That sounds really dumb. And then there's about 3 or 4 steps for every photo, and then you take the image and then you look at it and you think, that's no good. Start again. So it's not just click, 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 which also brings a more consideration to the way that you use the technology, which is nice. The other thing that I must say is that immutable quality of water that just is constantly changing. The camera is a marvellous way of just capturing and distilling that moment in time and freezing water. So that's ever since I was a kid, when I got my first camera, it was always, I love taking photos of water and capturing that moment.
I would just say that I think I loved that notion that one of the very first steps with some of those works was the fact that you had to send yourself a message. and really 98% of the population is probably using that app at parties to do cartoon images of themselves, you know, to send off to their friends. But how the artist will go, but what could I do?
Yeah, it just shows how introverted artists are. Send yourself a message.
I didn't have friends. I'll just send myself pictures of water.
Yeah. So the other nice thing about that stilled moment that a camera does to water is the way that I've thought about it is that I trace over the single point in time that the camera's captured and leaving evidence of the tracks of my lived time in the drawing and the painting that I do over the top. So it's extending, it goes beyond, like that's just the initial genesis is that capturing of the still. And then I go on and take it on another journey.
Yeah, which throughout. Is that mutability again, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It just keeps shifting and shifting from that starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I want to ask about colour.
Because, oh, colour.
Because they got away from water, didn't they?
They did a bit.
What's
they
going
did get
on?
A bit away from water. It's funny, this, if people at the back can't see this work, but do have a look at it. It's another fluoro work. Mm-hmm. And when I did this one, this was the last work that I did. And I was looking at it the other day and I thought, it's Pernalulu. We've flown over Pernalulu, and it looks like the landscape when you fly over Pernalulu. But it's water. It's sort of it, and it's more reflective of those Central Australia sort of colours or Western Australia colours.
Yeah. But
I mean, that certainly the ochres and the oranges and the blues. Well, I think with any artist, it's always an evolution. So you bring with you this palette that
desires.
You've used before yeah. and you're comfortable with. And you do challenge yourself along the way, of course. But, it's a natural occurrence that the colours appear. The fluoro is a new thing. I do like fluoro. It reminds me of being a kid. You know, like I grew up in the 70s and I had a Snoopy poster with it's all fluoro, feeling groovy. So it's
because I would say that thing about the terrain is, you know, you've talked a lot about the mutability and the impermanence, but a lot of them start to be very suggestive of aerial shots of mountain ranges.
Yeah,
it's like, and they're almost like Japanese woodblocks or something, aren't they?
Yeah.
They. But it's interesting, there's a few, this one down there and this one and certainly probably this one that start to really start as water and then become terrain really clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have studied a lot of printmaking and woodblock printing in the past, so I've brought that sort of bag along with it with me as well. And again, it's harking back to that fascination with out of the macro, drawing out of it the micro. So, you know, people, because I've had a person said to me when they saw the whole show, they said, oh, so it's all water, is it? Like it hadn't struck them as being everyone's being about water. So that was an interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
So do we want to open it up to people if they've got any questions? Oh. We have a question.
I have a question. Hopefully many questions, Ross. Congratulations
on this
beautiful, stunning evolution of your art making, of your work, whether it's painting, drawing, or printmaking, whatever it is. I also was very interested, one of the big interests for me is colour. And for me, I see these being a sailor as portholes through into your mind, in a way.
That's nice.
You've made a decision. Choose those moments, and I find that intriguing. You've also made a decision to choose these colours, and you reference your childhood and the joy that text has bring you. I have to ask you about the flag. I love the vibrancy of the colour, the relationship between the two rivers, but I've never seen them that colour, either of them.
Oh, no.
But maybe I'm wrong.
No. No, definitely, no. And I'm not, my work is not representational
not
in that way. It's never been representational.
No, I understand
so.
That. But what is the impetus behind choosing particular colours? Is it the emotional response, is it an instinctive thing? Is there a different story going on inside your head? it's, when you decide on your palette.
It's probably a parallel journey that's not necessarily about the meaning of the work or the meaning that you want to imbue in the work. So the colour palettes are probably fairly subjective and probably detached in a way. I mean, I have fun, you know, and I want to have fun because I've been doing it for a long time. I mean, I don't want to be... I have very low tolerance to boredom, so it's really about... There's a playful nature. It's also referencing, like, stuff in history, like the very first one is, you know, very Japanese sort of woodblock, sort of cut in the colouring with the watercolour and stuff. So there's, you know, it's many, many, many layered, but I think in the long run, I'm in that flow state and I really want to enjoy it. So colour is one of those things that I love to play with. So yes, definitely not representational of the Richmond or the Maywa. So yeah.
The transparency is beautiful, hey? This transparency film. And it changes the line. Like it blurs out the edge of the line.
Yeah.
As opposed to the much cleaner line on these ones. Yes. Is this predominantly inks?
Yes, that's all ink on drafting film. Mm. That one. Any other questions before we wrap up? Thank you for your patience.
Oh, there's one over there.
Oh. Radar, but it's certainly been, it's something that I think anyone who deals with landscape, you know, mapping and unmapping Western ideas of mapping and looking at how our First Nations people related to maps as well. It's all there, you know, that's the wonderful thing. When you're in the studio, you've got all those things that you're just drawing on and you're feeding on as you're creating work, so certainly it's come into my consciousness a lot over the past and through
and I think really even that notion, less political but maybe not, of when the borders closed with COVID, like this body of work, that was one of the catalysts or the triggers around this body of work, wasn't it, that you couldn't actually make that pilgrimage that you usually make that came down, that you couldn't cross a border, has somehow also generated this, or been one of the generators of this body.
You find the gold on your doorstep.
It's beautiful. A minute away.
This is my ongoing body of work. And are there any more questions? I've just got one more quote. Oh.
Because I want to appropriate later. When you put your work on the table and you start on your paper or whatever you're doing, is there a design or do you just start working and all the designs come into it? Like you talk about reflection and meditation. So is it like an organic thing that that becomes the circle becomes that? Or have you got a starting point that's computer generated or something?
Yeah, definitely. So I've got those iPhone images that I use. And because my eyesight's a bit challenged now, I also use what I call my camera obscura, being a Renaissance man like I am. I project that initial image onto the wall and the paper. And I transcribe what I call a template.
So it's a meditative process, I imagine, even so, you must get absorbed into that work.
Oh, yeah, and it's not a direct copy either. You're interpreting that photographic image into a graphic image and then taking that away onto the flat, and then it's, you know, hell for leather, like it's up for grabs. What happens then is... where it stops, no one knows. So, you know, that's the magic bit where you've sort of got an open.
Decisions.
Yeah, it's great. But the nice thing is I've got a template there which is a memory of the original image.
Yeah. So. And what's the template like? What medium are you using just for that template?
Often it's the drawing.
Yeah.
So what you see is those either black or blue or orange line work. The line work tends to be the initial, some of the line work, the initial drawing.
Do you launch in with the acrylic pens, or do you start with like a graphite pencil?
Depends. Some of them are coloured pencils starting off with. Some of them are, a lot of them are the Posca pens, the acrylic paint and the pen. It's got to be something that doesn't drip, of course, because you're working on a wall. It's funny because I at one no not too many secrets. It's not colour by numbers, by the way. You don't just draw it and then colour it in.
Yeah.
I am very good at staying inside the lines. I'm a Virgo, so.
Because they're interesting in that they've got so much of that movement, and for me there is that writhing thing about them.
Mm.
And yet there's an order to them. Like they have a repetitive, not pattern or something, but within that, and I think I might have said it in the essay, there's what, which I coined, a purposeful entanglement. So it has this thing that you think might be random, but there's such a purposefulness in it. Which I think is really special.
It's one of those things with nature, you very rarely find a very regular pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, there's patterns, but they tend to morph. And I tend to refer to it as unpatterning. So as people tend to like structure, and everything's really neatly patterned. But, you know, the nature uses that structure but breaks out of that into this lovely unpatterning, which is the organic.
Mm.
You know, it's good.
Beautiful.
So conscious of everyone standing. So
that was a pretty nice end point.
Yes. No more questions. And thank you.
There's more.
One more question.
Is that Wayne?
It's Wayne. Well, it's a bit difficult. Now, for those who don't know, with my eye problems, I can't see straight lines. So it's funny because when we were doing the hang, John said, okay, there's one more job, and it's putting the labels on the wall. Ross, it's your job. And I said, I don't think that's a job for someone who can't see straight lines. And if you notice, all the little signatures are slightly sort of on an angle. And I tried so hard to get them straight. And they're not straight. So anyway, so lovely.
Maybe we should close the conversation.
Yeah.
It's been a lovely, generous, warm, beautiful conversation, as the work is, for your audience and supporters, Ross. Michelle, thanks very much for the essay. Congratulations on the 800 words. It's terrific.
Yeah.
A big thank you and congratulations to Ross in what has been a challenging year. To produce this body of work is really remarkable. It is so fantastic and coherent. It's really
thank you. And I look forward to saying nothing to everyone.